to part two of the 86 Celtics interviews with the Chief, Robert Parrish, talking about one of the greatest teams in NBA history. In this episode, Parrish focuses on the NBA playoffs, which began with the first round matchup against a very young Michael Jordan, who had his coming out party at the Boston Garden.
We kept telling each other, whatever happens, do not let them win the game. We don't care if he score 80. Do not let him, let them win the ball game. That was our mentality. You know, we felt like one man was not going to beat us. And he was pretty much a one-man show. Yeah, and for me, I feel I would have took it as an insult. One guy single-handedly beat us because I thought we was all that, personally. And I just couldn't see one guy beating us. No, I feel like we was too good for that. So that was our collective thoughts. Don't let the Bulls win the game. We don't care how many points Michael get. We want to win this game. And that's sending a message. No matter how good you are, you still cannot beat us. And that was our mentality. Obviously, he was talented. You don't score that many points. I don't care if it's in the church league. 63 is 63, in my opinion. So obviously, he was talented, and he had a very bright future if he stayed healthy. We just didn't want him making a reputation off us. That was our mentality. You know, you make a reputation of someone else at another time. But we wanted to make sure we won the game and the series. So the 63 really didn't matter to us when you look at the big picture.
In round two, the Celtics squared off against Dominique Wilkins and the Atlanta Hawks. The Celtics won the first three games of the series, but then lost game four in Atlanta. The young Hawks had talked a little too much for the C's liking during that game. In game five, back at the Boston Garden, a determined Celtics team played a third quarter for the ages.
It was a thing of beauty. Everything came together. That's one thing about basketball in particular. Is that when everything comes together, when everybody's clicking, it's a thing of beauty. Not only the starting five, but the bench also. You know, we were clicking on all cylinders. Everything we did pretty much was right. We could do no wrong. Almost every shot that we threw up went in. It was just one of those nights, you know. I've been on the receiving end of nights like that when teams just can do no wrong. They're going to run. Kind of like what the Warriors do today when they go on a run and everything just falls into place. You know, everything they throw up go in. You know, defensively they're clicking. Offensively they're clicking. Transition game, you know, they can do no wrong. And so it was just one of those quarters for us and just took all the life out of the Hawks. You know, it's disheartening when you realize that no matter what you do, it's not going to make a difference. You know, that's why in basketball, they always say that great offense be great defense. And that is so true. You know, when you're in sync and when your game is on, nothing the defense can do. I don't care how good the defensive player is. Offense trumps defense. Well, we had three great passers on that team. Dennis Johnson, which people say that I'm underrated. I think Dennis Johnson is probably one of the most underrated players ever, in my opinion. You know, he doesn't get nearly the credit that he should get. And a lot of people forget that he was a formidable player when he was with Seattle Supersonics before he went to Phoenix. Oh, he was a load. And people forget that. And so we had Dennis Johnson, we had Larry, and Bill Walton. And I would feel like Larry and Bill was probably two of the best passing big men in the history of basketball, in my opinion. You know, they were exceptional passers. Not only could they pass in traffic, but they had enough heat on it to get through all the bodies, but yet he was soft enough where you could handle it. You know, wasn't too hot where you couldn't catch it and finish the play. So, And their vision, they had great vision, and I always respected that about them. You know, how they were able to see everything develop, and to make that pinpoint pass. And plus too, we was all finishers. All of us could shoot the basketball, even though DJ wasn't considered a great shooter, but he had his moments. You know, especially during clutch time. He almost every time he came through in the big moment. So like I said, we could all finish.
The Eastern Conference Finals produced a matchup against the Milwaukee Bucks and head coach Don Nelson. Nelly, of course, helped lead the Green to his share of NBA titles in the 60s and 70s, but a comment he made before the series about Celtics coach Casey Jones added fuel to the fire as the Celtics looked to complete their mission for banner number 16.
Oh, I remember that. Oh, that pissed me off when I think about it today. Because Don Nelson, I'll tell you why I got pissed off. Don Nelson said that he was a better coach and he was a smarter coach than Casey Jones, which pissed me off. I took it personal. I personally went at them. And that was the first time I ever took a series personally. I took it personal. I felt it was insulting, you know, the way we were rolling. And it wasn't just because of us, because you got to have a great leader. And we had a great leader in KC. And for him to say that about KC, I personally thought it was insulting and in poor taste. I know he was trying to motivate his team. I get all that. But he should have never went public with it, because that's all the ammunition I needed to go at him with vigor. It was in the papers, if I'm not mistaken. I think he went public with it. I can't speak for my teammates, but it certainly pissed me off and fired me up. I don't think it was vindictive or personal. I think he said it more out of trying to motivate his team, like, you know, we could beat these guys. I think that's why he said it. I don't think it was vicious or any malice involved in it, anything like that. But he should have never said it publicly. I do know that, because it certainly pissed me off. And when I think about it now, I get pissed off now thinking about it. Obviously, they were a handful to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, so you couldn't take them lightly. I always felt like, you know, you don't give a team ammunition, you know, anything to feed off. And I feel like that was their downfall when their coach, Don Nelson, made that statement. Then he had the nuts to say it publicly, which I found, like, he would, not only was he, in my opinion, disrespecting our coach, but he was disrespecting us. Because our coach didn't have the intellect to get past them. And I'm saying, well, he had the intellect to get to the Eastern Conference Finals, obviously. He's smart enough for that. So he was implied that they was going to win the series because of his intellect, which I found insulting myself.
Boston easily advanced to the finals, sweeping the Bucks. Out west, and to everyone's surprise, the upstart Houston Rockets got a miracle game-winning shot with 1 second to go from big man Ralph Sampson to ruin a rematch against the rival L.A. Lakers.
Unbelievable. Now, you're talking about a prayer being answered. If anybody believes there is a basketball god, he answered a prayer. Because that's what that was, a prayer. Not to mention the angle in which he shot it. It had no way it should have gone in. But it did. That goes to show you, it's never over until it's over. And that is so true. Sometimes it's just not your time. I didn't even like the Lakers at the time. I feel bad for the Lakers. To lose like that, on that type of shot, it's kind of hit the, like they're going to get stuck on the side of the rim. And somehow it crawled over the back of the rim and went in. To lose like that, it's disheartening. I actually feel bad for the Lakers. And that was the first and only time I ever did, you know, to lose like that. If it was a legitimate shot, he turned around and twisted, you can live with that. But to throw up a prayer like that and it looks like no way that's going in, then it falls in. You know, it just, just takes all the fight out of you. After I got past, you know, them losing the way that it did, because like I said, I actually feel bad for them. Nobody should lose a game like that. But it happens. It happens. You know, like we couldn't win because when we was playing the Lakers in 87, we couldn't win because Larry was hurt. Kevin had a broken foot. You know, he was hobbled. I had a sprained ankle. It happens. Bad things happen to good people and good teams. Going to be a long series. And it was. grueling, you know, because they were very competitive. They were well coached. They was hungry. They had a lot of ambition. And we knew that we had our work cut out for us. And I felt like, you know, even though that we, as well as we was playing, I knew personally that it was not going to be an easy series. It's going to be challenging.
Sampson represented half of Houston's Twin Towers, the other big man being a young but extremely talented Hakeem Olajuwon.
Oh, the dream. Oh, now he was a load. Quick, athletic, had all the shots, you know, had the heart, the ambition, you know, came to play every night. You know, playing against him in that series, you could see that it was just a matter of time before it was his time, before he evolved. And unfortunately, Raf got hurt, but I think it helped Hakeem because he was able to step forward and really mature and blossom as a player. Because I think it would have been harder for him to be the player that he became had Raf still been a part of that team, because he would have had to defer more than he normally would have. Because Raf, in my opinion, was just as good as he was, or would have been just as good as Hakeem would have been, had he stayed healthy. We was confident that we could win, but we also knew that no matter how they got to the finals, they was in the finals. And you got to respect that. You know, when you start underestimating your opponent, that's when you're going to get embarrassed. Because I'm a firm believer, assumption is the mother of all screw-ups, in my opinion.
In the second quarter of Game 5, Sampson and Celtics reserve guard Jerry Seasting got caught up in a brawl that cleared both benches.
Well, it goes back to the physicality of the playoff. They got all tangled up, and obviously the emotion was high because there was so much at stake. Words exchanged. And then things became a little too physical, unfortunately. But I tell you what, I think it inspired us, though. I think it motivated us after that little spat between the two teams. It propelled us because we were trying to find, you know, some type of rhythm, some type of groove, because we wasn't playing particularly well at that point. And after that, you know, that was the spark that we needed to get it done. We were upset. You know, first of all, we didn't have one of our better games, so we was all a little upset about that. Myself in particular, I didn't play well. I was in foul trouble most of the time, and I was ticked off about that. And then Larry had a couple of shots, you know, that he normally make that he didn't make, so he was pissed off. He had his underwear bunched up. You know, Kevin was pissed off because we lost, because even though we was going back home, you know, it was not a given that we was going to win, and we feel like we gave them life and momentum. We feel like the momentum changed, which it did, because momentum always goes to the winning team. So we felt we knew that we had our work cut out for us, and so we had to go back and regroup, work on our game, get sharp, and get ready for the next game.
The legend has grown over the years as to the intensity level of the practice when the team returned home before Game 6.
Ooh, all that hostility came out. It was competitive, I'll say that, which we needed that, in my opinion, because we had a lot of built-up anger, you know, because, like I said, we didn't play particularly well, and even though we didn't play particularly well, we still had a chance to win the game, in my opinion, but things happen. That's why I said you got to fall in love, you know, with the process of getting better. You can't love it, you got to fall in love with it. Because, as I said before, you're not always going to be rewarded with success. And so that's why you got to love the process of getting better. So we had a very spirited and competitive practice the next day after we got back in town. And that's what we needed, to rekindle our ambition to get it done.
Was there anything surprising how head coach Casey Jones ran the day's practice?
I know one thing he did. He swallowed the whistle. He didn't make one call, either way, for the white or the green team. And we were roughing each other up. Oh, it was. I'm surprised a fight didn't break out. That's how physical it was. I do remember that. He sucked on the whistle. That was it. He didn't blow it one time. Just let us play.
And I guess it got so intense that he called it off.
He had to. Because somebody going to throw a punch sooner or later. And that wouldn't have been a good thing. You know, we had too much on the line, you know, to be getting physical with one another.
Many Celtics players, including Larry Bird, have said that they have never been more fired up for a game than they were for Game 6.
Oh, yes. Yes, I was. Because, like I said, I wasn't happy with my play in Game 5, so I was definitely fired up for Game 6, you know, to... I wasn't as much concerned about winning so much. I just wanted to play better because I feel like my play hurt the team because I didn't play well the game before. So I would have come out and have a better showing.
Boston turned that intensity into a victory, adding another title to the Celtics' legacy.
It was obviously a fun, a happy time. It was rewarding. It was fulfilling. Because it's an endorsement that all the work and sacrifice and commitment that you did individually and collectively as a team, you're rewarded for that. And plus, we wanted to win it for the city of Boston, for the fans, for the organization, because of their undying support for us. And I feel like they got to be one of the best six-men in all the sports, no matter what the sport is. I think the Boston fans are some of the best. In my opinion, I know I'm being a little biased, but that's the way I feel about it. So not only did we want to win it for ourselves, but we feel like the fans and was just as deserving as the players was.
Parrish talks about the legendary celebration the team enjoyed following the final game.
It was for me. I went in for a week. I'm not going to even lie. Because it was such a relief, you know, so rewarding. Because of the year that we had, you know, we had one hell of a year. And so I felt like that was the icing on the cake. That was the ultimate compliment to one hell of a season to win the championship. Because I feel like going on that run that we went on the regular season would have not been nearly as sweet had we not won the championship. And with all that talent that we had on the team, I felt like we would have underachieved had we not won the championship. So it was very rewarding for me. I had my little bird chest stuck out for a week. I won't even lie about it. Oh, I had trouble getting up the next day. Ooh, you talking about a thumper. I had a headache the next day. Oh, my word. One of my worst drunks ever. Yes, I enjoyed it though. It was worth the pain, I'll say that.
Parrish weighs in on the 86 Celtics being in the conversation for one of the greatest teams in NBA history.
We're certainly one of them. I kind of have a problem with the greatest team ever. I think in that particular year, we were certainly the best team in the world. The 87 team. We were certainly the 85-86 team. We were certainly the best team in the world at that particular time. I would agree with that. But the best team ever, you know, you can make a strong argument, you know, for the Bulls, for the Lakers, and also for the Warriors of this era. I think they got to be in the conversation too, because it's a monster to win 73 games. That's a Hercules task right there. And I know we had won. We won 67 games. And I was like, whew, man, tough. It's challenging. You know, it's a long grinding season. And so any team that wins, in my opinion, that wins 50 games or more should be commended because it is so tough to do that in the NBA.
Specifically, how would the 86 Celtics have matched up against the 73-win Golden State Warriors?
Well, one thing that we don't get credit for, in my opinion, is our defense. I feel like we were exceptional defensively. And I am of the belief that if you're a big man and you can perfect that 6 to 8 foot shot, that's a very high percentage shot. You know, if you can perfect that, you're always going to be in demand and you're always going to be a threat. You know, if you can, that's one of the things that Kevin and I could do. you know, and we could do damage in close around the basket because we were both very good shooters. And also we were a very good defensive team. I think we get more credit for our offensive prowess than we do for our defense. And Dennis Johnson, he was an exceptional defensive player. Danny, he worked at it also. So I felt like that we would have Steph and Klay Thompson's going to get theirs. But those other guys, them Harrison Barnes and Jeff and Green, all of them, we locking them up. You know, the great player's going to get theirs no matter what era. And I feel like Steph and Klay Thompson, they're going to get theirs. But in my opinion, two guys cannot beat us, in my opinion. They can't score enough points. Because them other guys, I won't call them underachievers, but them second-tier guys, no. We take too much pride in our defense for that to happen.
Dennis Johnson was a huge piece of the puzzle for the 1986 Celtics. Tragically, DJ died of a heart attack on February 22, 2007. Parrish talks about the leadership DJ provided on and off the court.
Well, talk about it, it's basketball dominance first. I feel like Dennis Johnson was one of the best two guards because he played two guard when he was with Seattle before he started playing point for us. And not to mention, I would feel like his defense was ahead of his offense. He was a better defensive player than offensively. And he would, for some reason, he never really got credit for his basketball dominance. You know, he was exceptional, you know, kind of deceptive. You know, didn't look like he was fast, but he was deceptively quick, had good ball handling skills. You know, he could post up, go outside, inside. Exceptional passer. I never really appreciated his passing until he came to the Celtics. You know, great vision. You know, he, like Larry and Bill, he was great in passing through traffic. You know, had enough heat on it to get through the traffic, but you could always handle his passes. You know, he really helped out Kevin and myself because he was able to break down the defense, you know, with his dribbling and ball handling and make the right pass. You know, and I said before, we was all great shooters, Larry, Kevin, and myself. We could all finish. And so we kind of fed off that. All we had to do was just get in position and let DJ do his thing. And from a people standpoint, one of the best people that I ever met, best person I ever met, in my opinion, because he kept everybody calm. When somebody had their underwear bunched up, it was DJ that went over and talked to whomever had issues with whatever was going on with them in terms of with the team. He was the one that squashed it. You know, if I didn't like you or you didn't like me, DJ was the one that got us together and said, hey, you guys need to bury that, squash that, work out the differences because that could be cancer for the team. So he was the one that kept peace in the locker room. And I always respected it about him because he didn't have to. We was all grown men, you know, we are capable of working out of our own differences. But he felt like it was important to squash anything small before it became something big and a problem. And that's one of the reasons why I have such great respect for him, because he didn't have to do that. We just clicked, you know, we vibed for some reason. I don't know why, you know, we just kind of gravitated towards one, even though he was married and had a family. But he just always, Chief, what you doing tonight? Let's go get something to eat. You know, let's go to a movie or something. Let's go have a drink. Yeah, he was like that. So I always respected it because I'm the type of person, you know, when it's over, I should go back to my room or go home and just chill. But he always wanted to interact with me for some reason. So I guess he felt a certain vibe with me, which I'm glad, though, because he's one hell of a person, you know, a great man. I was so upset and depressed that I did not go to his funeral. That's how bad I felt. I just didn't want to see him like that. It bothered me. It took me almost a week before I was all right with it. Because we all got to die one day. That's something we all got to address one day, but it hit me hard, man. You're talking about a kick in the nuts. That's what that was, man. I just lay down. That really hurt me. It really did.
DJ's backcourt partner that season was current Celtics Director of Basketball Operations, Danny Ainge. What does Parrish remember about Danny back in the day?
Cheap. Oh, the cheapest person I ever been around. He the only one, when we all decided to go out and eat, he the only one asked for a separate check. Only one. Every time we went out, I want a separate check. Oh, was he cheap. He was so afraid that he was going to put in a little bit more than what he ate. Oh, he was cheap. He would swear he was making minimum wage. Oh, he was a cheap person. Other than that, though, he was cool. But man, is he cheap. I wonder if he's still cheap today. I'm just out of curiosity. I know you don't know, but just out of curiosity. What does he still like that? When he and his friends go out, do we still ask for separate checks? Do we ever pick up the tab? Because he never picked up the tab when we all went out to eat. Well, he was great as a teammate, but he was definitely someone you didn't want to play against because he was an irritant. You know, kind of like a Dennis Rodman type mentality. And every time you turn around, he's right there. You know, in your face, you know, in your space, a face, so to speak. So he certainly was an irritant to the opposing team. But you definitely want him on your team because he was a scrapper. He did whatever it took, you know, to make sure that we got a win. So he did all the dirty work in terms of harassment and diving for loose balls and the hustle plays. So You got to respect someone like that, you know, and he didn't get a lot of credit for it, a lot of recognition, but that did never change his approach to the game. Sometimes he'd come across as a know-it-all, like sometimes he'd take an ill-advised shot and always, no, that was a great shot. I'm like, Danny, we not even crossed half court yet, and you taking a 20-footer, but that's my shot. I said, we get that, Danny, it's your shot. But give us a chance to get cross half court. You got us in the middle of transition, especially when he don't make it. You know, and now, you know, just me crossing half court, now the offense is coming back at us. You know, and he wonder why, you know, everybody's getting on him. Because it's not that he took the shot. We try to get him to see is when you took the shot. But he could never get that. It never registered. No, this is my shot. It doesn't matter when I take it. This is my shot. You know, you just could not change his mind about that. But that's my shot. But then we get that. It's an ill-advised, that's my shot. That's all. We don't mind you taking a shot. You know, just take it in the rhythm of the game, your shot. Could never do that for some reason.
Days after the Celtics won the title, they were lucky enough to have the second overall pick in the NBA draft, thanks to another trade from the legendary Red Auerbach. Boston selected Maryland forward Len Bias, who many predicted would be an NBA superstar. But just 2 days after being drafted, Bias died of a drug overdose.
When I heard about it, had the radio on. One few times I had the radio on because normally I got a tape in listening to some personal music. And I just pulled over to the side. I was on the Mass Pike, going to meet some friends for lunch. And then came over the radio that Len Bias had died. I just pulled over to the side. I'm like, what? First I thought it was somebody pulling a prank, first of all. And then when they repeated it, that he had died, I just sit there, couldn't believe it. Guy that young and his life is over. So it definitely made me pause and have a moment of disbelief. As I said before, instead of the Lakers being a five-time champ, we would have been, because we got to the finals five times. And I feel like we would have won it all five times. And don't forget, we lost Reggie Lewis also. He was another valuable piece. We had those two pieces, we would have had enough firepower to get by the Lakers. And that was the difference between the two teams. They had more firepower coming off the bench than we did. And that was the difference. I was devastated. You know, if I was a superstitious person, I'd swear somebody had a doll sticking pins in the Celtics. You know, like we was cursed or something. You know, what are the odds that you're gonna lose two players like that, of that magnitude, that talent? What are the odds of that? You know, that goes to show you how fragile life is. So it hit me hard. Actually, hit me harder with Reggie because I was close to Reggie. So that really made me pause. You know, that hit hard because he was such a quiet, unassuming person. You know, easy to get along with. You know, great person. So to lose him, and he was a great teammate also. So that hit home, really did. Well, one thing about sports, I think it mirrors life. Everything ebbs and flows, just like life. And no matter how successful you are, you're gonna go through a period where you're not gonna be successful. You know, and that's why I subscribe to that philosophy. Sports is just like life. That's why I always feel like sports, like music, transcends ethnicity, religion, and politics, and that bridges that gap. And I think one of the reasons why, when you have a loss like Reggie or Lynn Bias, it hit home, you know, and it's such a devastating blow, because that's like your extended family, your teammates, because you spend so much time with those guys. So they're like family. And so when something happens like that, you know, it's really personal and emotional. In my opinion, I think one of the reasons why Larry Kevin and myself are Hall of Famers, I don't think it's so much our individual talents, is that we was on great teams. We played on great teams. You know, we had one hell of a run. And I think that's the main reason, in my opinion, why we in the Hall. You know, even though we had great individual talents, but I don't think that's what got us into the Hall. I think the great team that we played on, that's what sealed the deal, in my opinion.
Thanks for listening to another episode of our series on the 86 Celtics. Again, you can subscribe on our iTunes feed by searching CSNNE or by downloading on CSNNE.com. Look for a new episode every Tuesday and Thursday.